Innovation Policy will come to order. This is our 13th meeting, and the time is passing quickly for that deadline that we have on March 10th, so everybody be aware of that as you bring forth proposals to this committee. We would like to get through the big bill on the agenda today during this meeting time this morning. But if not, we will reconvene at 5 o'clock in this room. No, in room 5. We would resume at 5 o'clock if we have to take a recess. So keep that in mind, please. We will have a timer for House File 140's testimony. So also pay attention to that. We welcome you here. And Representative Barr moves the minutes from February 16th. Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the minutes from February 16 are approved. Members, first on the agenda today is another vehicle bill for me to send to the General Register, so I will move House File 1107 to be re-referred to the General Register. This vehicle simply changes a couple of verbs. You will notice on line 19 from is required to a direct must and in computing to compute. Ms. Pera knows that I prefer that kind of verb. So that is done again on the backside on line 2.9. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all of those in favor of referring 1107 to the General Register, please say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and House File 1107 is on its way to the General Register. Members, with that, we'll begin the feature of today, which is House File 140, and Vice Chair will take, while I go to the testifying table with Ms. Pera. Good morning, committee. It is really an honor for me to be in front of you this morning to bring forth House File 140, which I move, and after it has been amended, we will re-refer this to the Committee on Government Operations. So with that, members, you will find a delete all amendment in your folders. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the HD 140DE1 amendment, which is essentially House File 1079, to be before the committee.
All those in favor of adopting H0140DE1, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to move to get the bill in the order that it should be as we debate it today, to move the A11 amendment.
So all those in favor of adopting the A11 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Amendment is adopted. This bill is now in the shape that the author would like to use.
So, members, this has been like a seven-month journey, and Representative Mariani knows that because he also served on the legislative study group that reviewed licensure. You may not know this, but it was about a year ago that the Legislative Audit Office of the Auditor reported to us an audit of the Board of Teaching and the licensure division held within Minnesota Department of Education. And with that came some recommendations after review that found some rather disturbing confirmation of what many of us knew as we had received emails from those candidates seeking licensure in our state from out of state, or even those who lived in our state seeking licensure or seeking renewal. And we also had a board of teaching that was held in contempt by the court, and also a lawsuit filed against it. So we had some disturbing news that we needed to take a look at, and this legislative study group did that. And so for 5 months met, and for the last 2 months, I think this has been a team effort, at least from my perspective, of putting together this delete all that I have also amended, and I will explain that in just a moment. But first I want to give you a high level of what this delete all as amended consists of. The need, as the audit report suggested, to have one entity because of the confusion that having some of licensure occur in the department and other decisions made by the Board of Teaching, we needed to determine what entity, and you will notice in this file that I'm proposing the creation of a new 11-member board. New because I think we need to rebrand a board that takes care of one of the most respected professions in our state, which is the profession of educating, the profession for our teachers. And my thinking is that to restore this reputation, we need a new creation. And I think that having this established, we are going to then regain that confidence that we want our candidates and our teachers, most of all, to have in a governing board. You will notice as you walk through the bill that the makeup of the board is essentially rank-and-file teachers. And we'll discuss this later, I'm sure, in depth. But I want those who are closest to the classroom to be making decisions for our profession, my profession, for that which we hold most dear, the education of our children by our teachers. Also school administrators, because they make, for the most part, decisions about staff, you know, who's going to be hired for which positions. We also have left BOSA, which is the Board of School Administrators, by themselves, except for issuing the licenses, because we do have to have one entity to issue licenses. So the Board of School Administrators will remain separate. We have allowed for adoption of rules for certain specific sections of the law. You will notice that we have at least four places where we have consolidated, because one of the recommendations from the audit was that we had sections of law all over the place, and we know that was true. And so as Ms. Perra has worked through this file, there are at least four major consolidations, and that was also a recommendation from the audit. We also have a pretty foolproof transfer of power, because we're looking for accountability members, we're looking for transparency, we're looking for efficiency. Then the other recommendation, major recommendation from the audit, was to perhaps consider a tiered system, and that is what we have considered. We have kept it simple in naming four tiers, really empowering, we think, local school boards to make a decision about licensing those staff that they must hire for whom there may not be a license available. The report from the Board of Teaching's report on special permissions, and which was included in the legislative audit report, shows that personnel variances in 2015 almost reached 1,700. You know how time-consuming that must be for our school personnel as they do their hiring decisions. We also have a new section on appeals for renewal, a new addition to mandatory reporting, and also an Article 3. So with that said, I do want to point to the author's amendment that we've already moved, and that is that there's going to be a deletion, or there is, if this prevails, in the end, a deletion of Article 4, That is an excellent career and technical approach. I'm not opposed to it, but we need to embed it within the file that we've created. And honestly, I would also like more than Minnesota State to consider having career and technical education within their purview. So we'll consider that at a later time. The other changes in the author's amendment have to do with clarity on page 33 in regard to one of the tiers, and then also in tier 1 on page 31, ensuring that the definition of teacher does not refer to Pell Rep, so that those that school districts must hire and for which a Tier 1 license will be issued will not deal with that. So, members, with that, I'm going to have Ms. Perra walk through the bill. We are so pleased that she has worked so closely with us. This is a first major assignment, you know, for a new nonpartisan House researcher, and she has worked long and hard on this. We've had, I think, at least 5 or 6 drafts that we've had her present to us. So, with that, Mr. Chair, I would like Ms. Perra to present.
Thank you. Ms. Perra?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm just going to walk through the delete all amendment here. As Representative Erickson discussed, there's overhaul to both. There's changes to both the board and the licensing system. So, first one, Article 1, focuses on the board itself. It establishes the new board. The definitions, section 1 of the amendment, section 122A06 that has the amendments, those are largely the same except for it adds definitions for shortage and for field. And the definition of shortage was previously in Chapter 122A in a different section. Section 2 of the amendment establishes the membership requirements for the board. And it walks through, for example, for the teachers, whether they can be serving the administrative function at the school or they can be from the exclusive representative. It has also limitations regarding the principals and members of the public. Subdivision 2A of that, staying within that section, provides expiration dates for the initial board members. The board members will be appointed by the governor. And members of the current Board of Teaching will be ineligible for first appointments to the new board. There are some changes also to the administration. Currently, some provisions relating to administration are from Chapter 214, which deals with a number of boards. So some of these things will be different. For example, the governor will be appointing the executive director, as you'll see in Subdivision 4A. You'll see paragraphs A, B, and C gives a little more information about the administrative functions of the board, including that the Department of Administration will provide the board with certain support services, and the Department of Education will provide offices and other space until January 1st of 2020. After that, the new board could contract with either the department or the Department of Administration for space. Subdivision 5 is largely the same. It simply substitutes the name. That's the provision that deals with district reimbursement and for costs of substitute teachers. Section 3, that's 122A08, that deals with meetings. And much of that is unchanged. Several of these sections, for example, the next several sections, 4, 5, and 6, those simply substitute the name of the board. Subdivision Section 7, which is 122A09, Subdivision 4, that has significant changes. 122A09 now lists all of the board's duties. were in some sections, some provisions that were previously in 122A09 are now consolidated in other sections. But Section 7, which is 122A09, Subdivision 4, which deals with licensing, requires the board to license teachers. It prohibits the board from delegating its authority to make licensing decisions and eliminates the board's general authority to adopt teacher licensure rules. And you'll see it also strikes language relating to teacher preparation programs, license requirements, renewal, and teacher assessments. That's all of that language appears in other sections now. Section 8 requires the board to provide certain reports, and the details of those reports are now in 122A091. Section 9 provides for the register of person's license. That simply substitutes the board's name. Section 10 deals with board money. Previously, there was a role there for the Department of Education. Now that everything is consolidated under one board, that language is removed. Section 11 deals with board rules and requires, previously the language said may, now it says must, requires the board to adopt rules relating to specific sections in Chapter 122A. And it also requires the board to adopt rules relating to fields of licensure, including a process that grants permissions to license teachers in a field that is different from the teacher's field of licensure. So, for example, if a teacher has a Tier 3 license in a specific field and would go to teach in a field for which the teacher doesn't have a license, the board can make rules relating to governing that situation. The board will also adopt rules relating to the grade levels that a licensed teacher may teach. And if a rule adopted by the board is in conflict with law or statute, the law prevails. Section 12 governs permissions. Some provisions there are stricken relating to, for example, the one-year professional license and the one-year waiver, since there is now a tiered license system. Section 13 consolidates all the teacher-related reports. Most of these were previously in Chapter 122A. They were simply scattered in various provisions. The new language is the Survey of Districts, which is Subdivision 5. That's the teacher supply and demand that's currently done by the Department of Education. And so starting in 2021, the new board would do that report. It also requires an implementation report. That's in Subdivision 6 to report to the legislature on the implementation of the tiered licensure system. Section 14 is the new 122A092 that consolidates all the requirements for teacher preparation programs. That's in subdivisions 1 through 7. Most of that was previously in Chapter 122A in various forms. Section 15, fraud and gross misdemeanor. That language was also, again, previously in 122A. This just moves it to a different section. It was previously in 122A09, which now lists the board's duties. So it moves out of that section. Section 16, district verification of teacher licenses, that substitutes the board name. Section 17, survey of districts, that again is relating to the supply and demand report. It simply changes the Department of Education. It says now they'll only do the report until 2020, and starting in 2021 it will be up to the new board. Section 18, Commissioner of Education Services, eliminates the requirement that the commissioner provide Board of Teaching offices and other space. Section 19, again, that's carving the Board of Teaching out from those Chapter 214 provisions relating to various boards. that section, Chapter 214, requires, it relates to how the executive director is appointed in the new board. The executive director is appointed by the governor. So that's why that's different from Chapter 214. Section 20 substitutes the board name. Section 21 is the transfer of powers provision. This would go in the uncoded language, and it transfers all the licensing and credentialing responsibilities from the Board of Teaching and Department of Education to the new board. It's in accordance with Section 15039, which is a transfer of powers section. It spells out what happens in these situations with regards to personnel, contracts, property, etc. All of those provisions would apply here. This also requires the new board to review current rules adopted by the Board of Teaching and amend or repeal rules not consistent with the statute, and to review the teacher preparation programs that were approved by the Board of Teaching. Section 22 is blank appropriations for the new board to fulfill its duties. And Section 23 is an instruction to the revisor. Section 24, it repeals subdivisions in one section 122A09. That's language that is now coded in other sections.
And Ms. Perry, let's take a break here, and I'd like to have the pages who are visiting us today to come forward and just say your name in this microphone and the school that you represent. We're always honored to have pages come so early in the morning to listen to education policy. So please come one at a time and say your name in this microphone with your school.
Well, hello. Glad to be here. I'm Sheldon Jensen. I'm from Owatonna.
Hello, I'm Gabriella Foss, and I'm from Waconia High School.
Hello, I'm Leo Alfred, and I'm from Rochester, Minnesota.
I'm Samantha Sanchez, and I'm from Armstrong and Plymouth.
I'm Julianne Backer, and I'm from CGB High School.
I'm Andrew Giefer. I'm from Nicollet High School.
Good morning. I'm Mitchell Jams from Holy Family Catholic High School in Victoria.
Good morning. My name is Nat Jacobwith, and I go to Eden Prairie High School.
Well, thank you very much, Pages. You probably didn't realize that there's quite a process to the licensing of those who every day impart their knowledge and help you learn knowledge and skills. This is quite elaborate, and one thing I've neglected to say is that the name change is very important. We're going from a Board of Teaching to a Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. So professional educator, very distinguished, and I think will convey to all that we really mean business when we put someone in a classroom. We want them to be highly skilled, knowledgeable, but most of all, focus on you, the learners, so that you leave that classroom and that school well-educated. We also have in our audience the Totino Grace High School Journalism class, and if they would stand, please. And students, why don't you come up and introduce yourselves as well? Just form a line and come in and tell us where you're from, because if you're at Totino Grace, you're probably from various communities.
I'm Jake. I live in Ham Lake. I go to Totino.
I'm Leo Lewis. I'm from Robbinsdale.
I'm Matt Kennedy. I'm from Maple Grove. I'm Kate Lawless, and I'm from Shoreview.
I'm McAllen McSherry, and I'm from St. Anthony Village.
Hi, I'm Vishal Chandra, and I'm from Shoreview.
Hi, I'm Joe Pence, and I'm from Coon Rapids.
I'm Andrea White, and I'm from White Bear Lake.
I'm Brooke Fleming, and I'm from Maple Grove.
Thank you very much, students. And studying journalism in this day and age, that's a huge lift. I was a journalism teacher as well, and am proud to say that students who went on to the University of Minnesota or Northwestern were always delighted that they had the chance to study journalism. So again, thank you for coming, and thank your teachers as well for what they offer us. So let's proceed with the new licensure system for Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. Ms. Para.
Go ahead, Christine. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Article 2 of the bill deals with the licensure. Section 1, which is 122A17, Paragraph A simply changes the board name. Paragraph B provides licenses in effect on September 1st, when a number of these provisions will go into effect. All those licenses will remain valid for one additional year from the date the license is scheduled to expire. Section 2, authority to license. This is Section 122A18, and this sets up the different tiers, which are spelled out in more detail in other sections. But Subdivision 1, Paragraph A, requires the board to issue licenses to candidates that meet the qualifications for Tiers 1 through 4, and refers to the sections that have those requirements. That Subdivision 1 also, as you can see, the stricken language of Paragraph C, removes the Commissioner of Education from that role of issuing the licenses. And then the other paragraphs, it simply substitutes the new board name. Section 3, which is support personnel qualifications, it requires the new board to issue licenses and credentials to support personnel. It strikes language regarding teacher qualifications from preparation programs, because that language is now in other sections. And also eliminates language regarding the one-year license, since licenses are all as now as provided in Tiers 1 through 4. Section 4, the reading specialist provision, that's unchanged other than the board name and striking out the date language that no longer is necessary. Section 5, permission to substitute teach, that substitutes the board name and also clarifies which tiers apply. So rather than saying a five-year license or professional license, it refers to the tiers. There's also new language providing when a person holding a lifetime qualified short call substitute teaching license, when they can reapply to the board for a certain type of license. Section 6 is the temporary military license. That's unchanged other than the board name and requiring the board to notify candidates for this license of the tiered licensure system. Section 7 is the background checks. The new language there requires the school district or charter school that employs an individual whose license is issued pending a background check. The board now has to notify that school district or charter school that the license was issued pending the background check. Section 8, licensure via portfolio. This language was previously in 122A09, subdivision 8, and it changes the board name. Section 9, which is subdivision 11, rules, requires the board to adopt rules setting forth criteria for three terms that relate to requirements for issuing the tiered licenses. Those are similar appropriate credential, relevant work experience, and similar content area. One thing to note is that this section, these sections relating to the tiered licenses go into effect July 1st, 2018. The board, the sections that relate to setting up the board go into effect September 1st, 2017, which would give the board some time to start to implement these provisions before they go into effect. Section 10, on page 30, that relates to the Tier 1 license, and it provides the requirements for the license, the coursework that's required. Subdivision 3 provides that the Tier 1 license has a term of 1 year, which may be renewed 3 times, and the board is required to issue rules for additional renewals. Subdivision 4 provides a timeline for applying for a Tier 1 teaching license, and Subdivision 5 provides some limitations on the license. The Tier 1 license is limited to the content matter indicated on the application, and it does not bring an individual holding a Tier 1 license within the definition of a teacher for purposes of Sections 122A40 or 122A41. The Tier 2 license that's provided in Section 11, again, it has the requirements, the coursework that's required, the term of the license. This one is also a one-year license. And again, this one does not bring an individual within the definition of a teacher for purposes of Sections 122A40 or 122A41. Section 12 has the Tier 3 license requirements. The requirements are in Subdivision 1, the coursework requirements in Subdivision 2. Subdivision 3 provides this as a 3-year license that may be renewed indefinitely. Section 13 provides the requirements for a Tier 4 license, and this is a 5-year license that may be renewed without limitation. Section 14 relates to teacher licensure assessments. Most of this language was previously in 122A09 and 122A18, so this just consolidates all that language. Section 15 relates to the human relations coursework. That was previously under 122A18. The addition here requires the board to adopt rules. Section 16 consolidates requirements for expiration and renewal. That language is, again, previously in 122A09 and 122A18, and it clarifies tiers that apply. So, for example, on line 3510, on page 35, line 10, you'll see that the requirements are for a Tier 3 or 4 license, so it just clarifies what tiers each of these relates to. Section 17, this is the new language establishing a process for appealing a denial of licensure. Denial would mean both a level, a tier level, and a field of licensure. It requires the new board to issue a letter with certain information if the application is denied. And it provides for review of the denial in an appeals process under the Administrative Procedure Act, where an applicant could get a hearing with an administrative law judge. Section 18, that's the bilingual and English as a second language teachers. Much of that is unchanged. It substitutes the new board name, but otherwise it requires candidates to meet the requirements of the tiered licenses. Section 122A20, which is in Section 19 of the bill, suspension or revocation of licenses, that is largely unchanged other than the board name. And there's a new paragraph that requires a licensing board to report to law enforcement authorities if the license is revoked, suspended, or if there's an agreement involving a loss of license. when there was a when the teacher or administrator engaged in inappropriate sexual conduct with a minor. Section 20 substitutes the board name in provisions relating to teacher licensure agreements with other states. Section 21, this is the alternative teacher preparation program section. That's 122A245, and that changes the board name and clarifies the tiers that apply. So, for example, on page 43, line 13, where previously said a professional five-year license, it now says a tier 3 license. And it does make some, in section 23, there are some changes to the criteria to determine the qualifications of program instructors. Section 24, again, that's relating to the alternative teacher prep programs, changes it from a professional five-year license to a tier 3 license and provides that a candidate that has completed this program can apply for a tier 3 license. Section 25 relates to applicants trained in other states that, again, substitutes the board name and clarifies the applicable tier. Sections 26, 27, 28, and 29 all simply substitute the board name. Section 30... that's the exemption for technical education instructors. That section was scheduled to expire in 2020. So once that expires, a candidate could apply for a tiered license as provided in 122A18 to 122A184. Section 31, that eliminates language that created a variance for teachers in early childhood family education programs. Section 32, that substitutes the board name. Section 33 also substitutes the board name. Section 34, which is American Indian Language and Culture Education Licenses and Exemptions, substitutes the board name and also transfers responsibility from the Commissioner of Education for granting exemptions to the new board. Section 35, applies the license standards of the new board and of BOSA to teachers and administrators at the academies. Previously, that referred to the Commissioner of Education. Section 36, which is the Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Program, that substitutes the board name. Section 37, that would be uncoded language, that provides how licenses issued by the Board of Teaching would be treated under this new system. So a one-year license would be treated as a Tier 1 license, a two-year license as a Tier 2, a three-year license would be treated as a Tier 3 license, and a five-year license would be treated as a Tier 4 license. And again, these are for licenses that were issued by the Board of Teaching. And this would be effective July 1st, 2018. Section 38 is the repealer. And it repeals sections, let's see in your bill summary, there's a list there, but for example, provisions that required the Commissioner of Education to comment on BOSA rules, to make rules relating to personnel not licensed for the Board of Teaching or BOSA, other roles of the Commissioner of Education in the licensing system. Several provisions in Section 122A18, a number of those are recodified in other sections. 120A21 Subdivision 2, that's licensure via portfolio, that's now recodified in Section 122A18. Et cetera. Article 3 is non-teacher credentialing. This is just one section, and it substitutes the board name in the section that gives the board the authority to implement rules for credentials for paraprofessionals. In Article 4, that's the career and technical education program that the author's amendment, A11, that deletes that article, as Representative Erickson explained.
Thank you, Ms. Farah. Mr. Chair, may I also call attention to, I think, a handout that's in the packets?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, Ms. Perry did prepare a summary of changes as was directed by the audit from the Office of the Legislative Auditor. We needed to reorganize our sections that deal with the licensure and with the governing. And so she has laid out for you what current language is, the status under the new bill, and then on the back page, the new sections. And there's where you will see a review of the consolidations that have occurred, as well as the uncoded sections, which Ms. Perry did refer you to. So in summary, in regard to Article 2, the intent here by the author and the team with whom I worked was that in 2015, for example, the Board of Teaching had to issue 3,000 special permissions. That would include variances, but also community experts and other. So Tier 1 is really designed to empower school boards to now do what they used to do without those extra steps. They are the decision makers. They decide whether or not a candidate who seeks employment because they've exhausted their opportunities and their chances or availability to find a licensed teacher. So before they had to apply, wait for the board to act on their request, and then sometimes it came very late in the year, before the school year began, maybe late in August, sometimes not until September. So we think that empowering school boards in Tier 1 is going to make the profession at a level where it is a license. So whether you are with a BA degree or an associate's degree or a professional certificate, you are a teacher. You have a license. At least you are a teacher for most of what the law prescribes, not tenure and not PELRA in Tier 1. But you have that empowerment from the school board who's made a decision because they cannot find a candidate to fill that particular section of a course or a career and technical course. So we think that this is really a real improvement to empowering, as I said, school boards and allowing for local control and giving our professional educator licensing and standards board time now to focus on that, which is really important, and that's what it takes to be a quality teacher through the licensure system and through the teacher preparation programs. Because as you know, or if you don't know, the board evaluates teacher preparation programs, and that is one reason I did not include a member of higher education on the board. I believe there's a conflict of interest that this board should call forth for testimony from higher education institutions that have teacher preparation programs, that which they need to learn about what is needed or not needed in a program, so that when they're evaluating, there's no conflict among the evaluators in regard to whether or not that teacher preparation program has fulfilled the requirements of preparing our new candidates for the classroom. Tier 2, from my perspective and from the team's perspective, would be very inviting to out-of-staters if you review the requirements. And we have a menu, as you notice, and that was a recommendation from the audit, but it has served well in organizing this. Tier 3, that would be those who are in the probationary stage, and Tier 4 for those who are already licensed and, as you notice, have at least one summative teacher evaluation rated effective or higher. You know, in Minnesota, teacher evaluation is a local designed plan between the board and the bargaining unit, And so it is very important that we honor that local decision. And again, the candidate will know based on that teaching performance in that district whether or not they have reached the standard that has been set by the local school board and the bargaining unit. That's a joint agreement. And when we designed teacher evaluation for our state, we really wanted to keep that in mind, that even though there's 35% required for assessment, and that today can consist of growth and proficiency, we also wanted to honor the local flavor that we want our school boards to give to teacher evaluation. So that, members, concludes my presentation. I'll return to the chair's position, and we will begin to hear testimony. Thank you again, Ms. Pira, for your hard work. And this is, as I told Representative Mariani yesterday, a work in progress. So I invite all of you to continue to work with me and my team to make this the best possible legislation we can provide for our professionals, our teachers, our educators in the classroom, where we want the emphasis to be. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And our first testifier this morning will be Erin Doan, who is presently the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Welcome, Ms. Doan. Please say your name for the record and begin. And we're not going to put a time limit on your remarks, so we're going to honor the fact that you are the leader of this very important board at the present time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Erin Doan. I am the current Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Teaching, and happy to be with you here this morning. Even without time limit, I will be respectful and keep my comments brief. I'd like to first just point out that we're really happy to see a number of the recommendations that were made to the teacher licensure study group over the summer that have made their way to the bill. That's really encouraging to know that the hard work that was done by all stakeholders across the summer months really proved out in the language that you see in front of you today. The board is also very eager to support all of the recodification efforts that have been carried forth by Ms. Pera. And certainly if there's anything that we can do to support that going forward, know that we are at your service. A few comments that I would like to offer just regarding governance, and then I'll also address a few regarding tiered licensure. Regarding the governance for teacher licensure, certainly as we have stated over and over again since the end of the audit and the OLA report, we are very happy with the fact that we see this work living under a standards board going forward, and especially a standards board that still maintains a teacher majority, that's important to the voice of the profession. A couple of questions that we did have regarding composition and maybe just food for thought for all of you moving forward. Certainly, we do really value the importance of a higher ed seat, at least one seat on the Board of Teaching, or what would now be that Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. A lot of times there is research to guide the direction of Minnesota state policy, and it's important for that voice to be present. In addition, the Board of Teaching represents three related service areas, that already have additional standards boards across the state. Those would be for school social workers, school psychologists, and school nurses. We really would like to see some consideration given to having a voice for those professions or a seat for related services at the board table. And then finally, throughout the course of many discussions we've had with all of you on this topic, there have been a number of questions about teacher shortage and how these things are playing out. Shortages are playing out across districts. Consideration for an HR representative to connect us to the HR directors more closely in the state of Minnesota may be something to consider as well. In terms of the appointments for board members or board composition, we do request that you would reconsider rolling appointments for board members, especially with the amount of restructuring and the number of demands for rulemaking going forward, beginning with a brand new board with zero institutional knowledge of the processes does seem to be a challenging and uphill task to take on. So certainly if we could return to a model that would allow those terms to expire and for individuals to be replaced as terms expire, we believe that that would be more efficient for the governance. The piece that really did not receive a lot of attention, but one that still receives a lot of attention from constituents and from phone calls that we receive every day, would be for teacher testing, to return to the requirements for the skills exams, for pedagogy and content, and where those exams are appropriately placed within the tiered licensure model. Certainly, though they do appear at Tier 3, I believe, that really would allow someone to be in a classroom with our students for up to 8 years before those tests would be required. I think the other piece in regard to the testing requirements and tiers one and two especially would be to certainly we could share information about the licensure structures of surrounding states. There is some concern that some of the pieces that are involved in the construction of the tiers one and two licenses would also disadvantage candidates who are coming from other states and the provisions that we've been able to afford them since the statute changed in 2015. So we want to make sure we're not moving that piece of policy backward. Again, just going back to the Tier 1 and 2 portions of your tiered licensure structure, certainly there's a lot of positive change in an allowance for flexibility, and that's much appreciated. Again, the board does have concern that the definition for a sufficient credential that is placed in the definitions or the requirements for Tiers 1 and 2 doesn't necessarily provide for consistency across districts and consistency of expectation for the trained professionals that are available to students in every Minnesota school. So working on that definition to really make it clear that all schools and districts are operating on the same definition as those credentials are issued is an important concern of ours. Certainly, I just would like to review that the board does have a stakeholder advisory group that is made up of a number of the education stakeholders that you see before you on a weekly basis. Those groups have met to talk about tiered licensure, have taken a look at the multiple rule drafts that have come through the board's process, and certainly have made some recommendations that provide for the loopholes that might be present in the current draft. So we're happy to share any of those recommendations with the analysts and with staff to make sure that we haven't disadvantaged any new licensure candidates coming through the system. And then finally, I would like to point out the last concern, which is just in the issue of translation of the current licenses to the new tiered licensure system. I think, as Ms. Parra pointed out, there were a number of lines that describe the licensure that exists now as a one-year license, two-year, three-year, and five-year license. Within those transitions, there are also some errors. For instance, there is not a three-year license of any type at this point. And some of those translation issues of moving from what is right now a one-year license for candidates from other states moving to a Tier 1 license don't appropriately address the fact that they're coming in as professionally trained teachers. So we'd be happy to work with you on making sure that the transition of those licenses is aligned without errors that would disadvantage people coming forward. And with that, I will end my comments. And certainly any technical issues that we've seen brought up, we will work to make sure that staff receive. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stone. Next at the testifying table is Cindy Christ from MACD. Welcome, Ms. Christ. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought I was third on the list, so but I'm happy to be here. Now, Cindy Christ with MACD, the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education. I know that unlike Ms. Doan, you'd like the rest of us to try to keep our remarks to 2 minutes.
Yes.
So I will work very hard to do that. I want to say first that MACD believes this bill takes some really important steps forward in addressing the issues and challenges identified in the OLA report. You won't be surprised to know that we also have some concerns and some questions about some of the specifics. Because of the short time, I'm going to leave some of the topics unaddressed directly by me this morning, but commend to you two memos that you have received. One I know has gone to all of you. The other I just looked, and I believe not all have gotten. So I will try to make sure that the rest of you get them. But the first is a memo dated February 20th, sent by Dr. Misty Sacco from the University of Minnesota and a group of her graduate students who are also teachers. They did an incredibly comprehensive review of this, and I just want to warn you, you have some graduate student teachers there who are really fired up about education policy, so I have a feeling you'll be hearing more about them. They went through all of House File 1079 and made comments throughout. Particularly, I want to point out comments they made and suggestions about data reporting, human relations requirement, testing, and what they saw as some inconsistencies with Tier 2 general descriptions and descriptions in alternative pathways. Also, the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers sent a memo to many of you dated February 19th. That's the one in which it looks to me like not all members of the committee got it. Perhaps they sent it to those with whom they have met. But they particularly, not surprisingly, have focused on some issues regarding diversity, equity, and assessment. So I commend those to you. They're very thoughtful. They identify specific places in House File 1079 about which they have questions or concerns or suggestions. So I just want to group the rest of my comments briefly in three areas. In governance, generally, we're very pleased to see that the board will continue to have a majority of teachers. We think that's very important for professional board. Obviously, we're disappointed about and opposed to removal of the single higher ed voice. We frankly don't understand why that's seen as a conflict of interest. To have one higher ed person on a board of 11 to consistently bring that position. We're concerned about having an all-new board, given the scope and nature of the changes to be made. So turning the whole board over at once seems to us to not be a very good way to help this group move forward with the daunting but important tasks you've given them. Under teacher preparation, we had some questions on lines 14.9 to 14.12. It seems to sound like all preparation programs would be required to offer alternative pathways to CTE licensure. I don't know if that's your intent for literally all 31 teacher prep programs in the state to offer such an alternative pathway. Second question, lines 18.9 to 18.12. Appears that you are saying now that all prep programs are required to offer year-long student teaching. We have some questions and concerns about that and think you might want to hear more from the models of that. There's references to passing licensure tests for graduation on lines 15.11 to 15.12, when these are really requirements for licensure, not graduation. The reference to in-task in lines 18.16 to 18.17 are obsolete. They're actually the current version of in-task standards are 2010. I didn't write it down, but I think in the bill it says 1992. I may have that date wrong.
Thank you, Ms. Krista. Will you be sure that you submit your testimony in a written form to us so that we can review your concerns?
I will.
Thank you very much.
Can I say one more sentence?
Yes, please.
Thanks. Under tiered licensure, we very much support the concept, but we would commend for your consideration the proposal developed by the Board of Teaching. They've spent months working on this with all the stakeholders, and we think it offers a better, more workable approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Christ. Daniel Sellers from Ed Allies. And Ms. Watkins, I believe you're accompanying him. And is it Kirsten Rogers?
Yes.
So why don't you all three come forward? Pages, would you make sure there's an additional chair there? Welcome. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Daniel Sellers, and I serve as Executive Director of Ed Allies.
a local nonprofit which advocates for education excellence and equity, seeking to improve policy to help all students thrive. Over the last 6 years, my colleagues at EdAllies, along with many community partners, including many here today and many of you, schools and school districts and affected educators, from Bloomington to Bird Island, have been seeking an overhaul that would bring clarity, consistency, and fairness to the licensure process of experienced, certified teacher professionals who have come to Minnesota from other states. As you know, last year when the Office of Legislative Auditor released its report on teacher licensure in Minnesota, it had two major recommendations for fixing a licensure system, which it called broken, and which we had seen firsthand was not working to serve people who most needed that system to work well. This bill finally addresses these two recommendations in a robust and comprehensive manner. We support this bill because, A, it creates a tiered system of licensure which is easy to understand for all the parties involved, for the licensing agency, for school districts that are very interested in hiring these candidates from other states, and most importantly, for the candidates themselves, who for the first time will have a checklist of sorts which makes it objectively clear which licenses they qualify for and what they need to get those licenses. And B, the bill finally puts all teacher licensing responsibility into one body. I've had the chance to work very closely with Aaron Doan and Nels Olmsted, who's the Director of Educator Licensing, as well as with their predecessors. I've always found Aaron, Nels, and their respective staffs to be professionals who do their jobs well. But anytime two agencies are responsible for the same things, you end up with no one who is responsible. Through no fault of their own, they've been saddled with laws and statutes and assigned responsibilities that are contradictory, and it ends up along each side to say, that's their job, to the other. It's time for new, fresh perspectives on the Board of Teaching itself. Certain members have done much to throw sand in the proverbial gears of progress. I encourage your support for this bill, which takes into account the best of what we learned over the years from teachers, school and district leaders, and community stakeholders who have been seeking real and meaningful improvements. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sellers. Ms. Rogers?
Thank you for this opportunity to speak to all of you. I moved to Minnesota from Utah 12 years ago to be with the love of my life, and am currently teaching for Minneapolis Public Schools. Before moving to Minnesota, I taught for 12 years in Utah, was voted Teacher of the Year at my school, received the O.C. Tanner Award for Teaching, received two separate Fulbright-sponsored awards that granted me the opportunity to work with teachers in Russia and Japan. In Utah, I was licensed to teach history, English, reading, ESL, and geography, and I actually taught all of them to actual students. And I earned a Master's of Education. But none of these credentials or my actual teaching experience mattered when applying for a teaching license in Minnesota. After turning in my initial paperwork for a Minnesota teaching license, what I received back with no explanation, no guidance, was a restricted 2-year history teaching license. I was confused, so I called the only number listed, which was to the Department of Education. The person at the licensing department told me to send my transcripts to a university. No one directed me to contact the Board of Teaching, whose job it is to define teaching qualifications. Nowhere on the licensing website was the Board of Teaching referenced as a place to make an appeal, and most states do not have two separate bureaucratic organizations in charge of licensing. So why would I even consider that an option? I did turn in my information to the U of M and was told that in order to gain teaching licenses in both history and English, I would have to take numerous pedagogy classes again and student teach again. This added up to be about 30,000 hour, not 30,000, 20,000 would add it up to $20,000 of money and 30 hours of coursework. But I consider myself lucky because I do now have my license. And the reason I have my license is because I sued the Board of Teaching and had a court-ordered meeting with the executive director to get my license. It is ridiculous and dumbfounding that someone with my credentials had to sue in order to get a teaching license and teach in Minnesota, which is why I urge all of you to vote yes on House File 1079, which clarifies and streamlines the out-of-state teaching licensing process. And I do that in honor of all the many, many, many highly qualified teachers that moved to Minnesota and just want a teacher. And I urge you to do that as a mom with two kids in public schools. I want the best teachers for them. And that is what this bill will do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rogers. Mr. Watkins.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Richard Watkins. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Fagery Baker Daniels, and I'm one of the lawyers that leads our committee on ensuring education equality in the state of Minnesota. The last 3 or 4 years, we have dedicated substantial resources to representing individual teachers pursuing their right to teach in the state of Minnesota. We have had the honor of representing dozens and dozens of highly qualified teachers with master's degrees, with PhDs, with decades of experience. I'm here today to testify that at every turn, we have run into the same complication. The Board of Teaching has continuously imposed its will in clear violation of the law. We have sued and fought in over 50 cases, and we have won every single one. There have only been 3 times in which the Board of Teaching has actually defended their position. The first one was they defended their position that they could freely ignore the law. This legislature passed a law requiring the board to allow licensure via portfolio. Amazingly, the Board of Teaching took the legal position it could ignore that law. It was told by District Judge Sean Barch it could not ignore the law, and it was told on appeal it could not ignore the law. Nonetheless, it continued to ignore the law. It refused even after a court of appeals and a district court judge required them to allow licensure via portfolio. It continued to ignore the law. They were issued a contempt order. They were held in contempt of court and were the first state agency in the history of Minnesota to have to pay damages and punitive awards for violating not only a law but a district judge order and a court of appeals order. Nonetheless, they persisted. We had 2 trials in the last 6 months against the Board of Teaching. The first one was in regards to Mr. Matthew Hamill. In the middle of the trial, the judge stopped the trial, made very clear to both parties it was abundantly obvious that Mr. Hamill was entitled to licensure. We continued negotiations with the Board of Teaching, and it wasn't long before they finally admitted that after over a year or two of applications and a year of litigation, he was clearly entitled to licensure.
Mr. Watkins, would you conclude your testimony, please?
And in conclusion, I'm just here to say that every turn we've got clear laws, clear licensure standards, and yet the Board of Teaching insists on imposing its will in clear violation of the law. Dozens of testimonies from people within the Board of Teaching have admitted to their violations of the law. It's unfortunate, and it's time to stop with a clearer licensure tier structure and a single body responsible for licensure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins. Thank you, all three of you, and special thanks to our teacher. The attorney for Education Minnesota and the teacher from Roseville, please come forward. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Aaron, and I am a staff attorney at Education Minnesota. I've been working with and watching this committee as it and the legislative study group before it, and I want to say that Education Minnesota supports the overarching goals of this bill, and we greatly appreciate the preservation of an independent board with an educator majority. At the same time, we have a number of concerns and suggestions. On board composition, we'd like to see the law require that one of the educator members be from a related service category. School nurses, psychologists, social workers, counselors, and speech and language pathologists are all required to hold licenses from the board, and we think it's important to ensure that they have a voice in board policy and decision making. It may not come as a surprise that we are also troubled by the bill's provision that effectively bars union leaders from serving as teacher representatives on the new board. There was no mention of this as a concern in the OLA report, and we hope the authors will reconsider this exclusion. In addition, we're concerned that this bill eliminates the higher education representative position, which is important given that the board approves teacher preparation programs. The requirement that all current board members must leave the board effective September 1st, 2017 is also problematic. While we understand the author's desire for a fresh start, we believe that eliminating all 11 board members at once will deprive the board of important institutional knowledge at a critical time of transition. We believe that the tiered licensure structure outlined in this bill is promising, but with notable caveats. First, and probably most importantly in our eyes, we believe that districts should be required to seek out Tier 3 and 4 licensed teachers before hiring a teacher with a Tier 1 or 2 license. Second, we'd like to see the term professional credential more clearly defined and limited to career and technical educators. We believe that for all other subjects, it is not unreasonable, and actually it is important to require at least a bachelor's degree to work in a public school. Finally, as Ms. Lay will discuss in greater detail, we're concerned with the requirement that a teacher have an effective rating or higher in order to receive a Tier 4 license. Although this makes sense looking from the outside, our current TDE law does not have a universal effective rating, and local evaluation shouldn't serve as a marker of a statewide license. Again, we appreciate the careful effort and thought that has gone into this bill, and we believe that with the changes I've discussed, we will create a licensure system that meets the needs of all Minnesota's classrooms. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Aaron. Welcome, Ms. Lee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Maria Lay. I'm a teacher in Roseville Area School District, and I've been in education for 10 years. I served on the Advisory Committee for Education Minnesota's EPIC paper on teacher recruitment and retention. Our geographically and culturally diverse team spent months comparing academic research to our classroom experiences to develop policy recommendations. In addressing the teacher shortage, it is important that we do not sacrifice quality or put educators in classrooms without the proper support to be successful. I am concerned about some of the provisions in this bill that pertain to the tiered licensure. Although the idea of a tiered licensure may be a creative way to address the shortage, I am concerned that this may open up some unforeseen systemic practices that may either amplify the shortage or create further barriers to teachers. For example, a district might hire a Tier 1 or 2 licensed teacher for financial reasons over a Tier 3 or 4 licensed teacher who has completed a Minnesota teacher preparation program or an equivalent. We would like to see, at minimum, a requirement that a district demonstrate to the board that it has posted a position and could not find a qualified Tier 3 or 4 teacher before hiring someone who meets the minimal requirements of a Tier 1 or 2 license. I am also concerned that because teachers with Tier 1 and 2 licenses from the continuing contract and tenure laws, they will also be excluded from the TDE or teacher development and evaluation process that applies to all other teachers. I hope you will consider including Tier 1 and 2 teachers in TDE and that you will consider requiring districts to provide them with a minimum level of on-the-job mentoring and support until they have completed preparation programs. I'm also concerned about the requirement of an effective evaluation for a Tier 4 license. I currently have a 5-year license, but under this bill, I and my colleagues would be required to provide the board with an effective rating or higher from any administrator. This is problematic because there is no effective category under the TDE law, and I have seen how evaluations can vary widely from one district to another. Finally, I am concerned about the requirements to pass all licensure exams for a Tier 3 license. These testing requirements have improved, but they are still proving to be a significant barrier for educators of color and educators from low socioeconomic status backgrounds to attaining a full license. My own student teacher of color completed her student teaching experience in 2015. I immediately saw her heart for education and her gift for reaching all students.
Will you please close up, Ms. Lee?
Yes. To this day, she is still trying to pass all MTLE requirements. I should also note that as a requirement of teacher licensure programs and pre-service teachers, that she must complete a project called an EdTPA, which is currently being used as an exemplar, but we are keeping her from the classroom because we are expecting her to pass a test that's fraught with cultural bias. Under this bill, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming. We'll call Ryan Stromberg from Spring Lake Park Schools, HR Director, and Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of the Association of School Administrators. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Ryan Stromberg. I'm the Director of HR for Spring Lake Park Schools. I also serve as the President-elect for MASPA, which is Minnesota Association of School Personnel Administrators, or HR Directors for the state of Minnesota. And I'm here serving both roles. First, I want to commend, as I've been here as much as I possibly can. This is, in my 17 years, this is by far the most progress we've seen with teacher licensure, so thank you, first and foremost. And I just have actually a few comments, and I will be brief. We've fortunately had, as the MASPA group, had a fortunate opportunity not only to work with MSBA and also AMSD. So we're coming to you more than just one voice, but actually trying to work together as you have done your work. We've had a chance to sit down with Senator Pratt and also just give him our feedback as he was so willing to listen. And just, I'll just be brief and to what has been so I don't repeat what's already been discussed. First, thank you for the tiered system. We think it's great progress. As we see two primary customers from a school district, we see a new applicant, which could be a new graduate and or anyone that's post, career career, second career, third career, whatever it mean, whatever it could be. And then that other customer is really someone traveling from out of Minnesota that wants to be licensed in the state of Minnesota. I have a story, but I won't repeat it, but the educator Rogers brought up a great story. And after 17 years of doing this work, we could tell you all kinds of stories of roadblocks we've put in front of potentially great applicants. Now, the couple things I will speak to is, as on the board, we would love to have a position as a MASPA, as the person that not only interprets whatever law we come up with or the bill, but as HR directors. This is the work we do every day, especially in your large urban districts and outstate school districts. So, again, having a position, having a MASPA member at that board would be fantastic. Second piece is, as many of you know, we're required in the state of Minnesota to report all personnel to the state of Minnesota twice a year. It's called STARS reporting. We believe within a very simple process, we could keep the state up to current with whatever we do at that board level, at our local level, with regards to evaluation. All I'm saying is we could synthesize that. We don't have to create a second or third tier of reporting. We think we can do it within the one that we currently have. So we'd be I'm happy to offer our services, or at least our ideas with that. Again, it's to reduce or not add more reporting than we currently have in our current system. And then just the last piece, as we think about the tiered system, not to add a tier, I love that there's four tiers. The one thing we may want to consider is just, we've had it before in the state of Minnesota, but someone that has a certain amount of experience teaching, either in our state or somewhere else, potentially TRA eligible, has a life license or some type of license where they don't have to continue to go back and be renewed. We're in a situation where we have a sub shortage, and we do, in Spring Lake Park, for example, our biggest applicant pool for substitute positions is retirees. Mm-hmm. The hard part is they no longer can get a regular license. They have to go back and get a short call sub license, which requires a lot more work, and we would love to honor that experience of that teacher. So those are my comments. As I said, I keep those brief. But one thing I just want to add, if there's anything that we could offer from a MASPA group, we'd be happy to offer any type of conversation. Thank you again for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Stromberg. Welcome, Mr. Amoroso. Please say your name for the record and begin. And let's have Denise Dietrich on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of the Minnesota Associated School Administrators, representing our superintendents and other district-level administrators in the state. I want to start off by thanking the Chair for the work her and her colleagues have done on this bill. We feel very good about the bill. Specifically, we're pleased that the Board of School Administrators will continue to function as a separate entity responsible for the election share of administrators. That board has been working very well and have no doubt that it will continue to work well, so we're pleased that it will continue to function as a separate entity. Secondly, we're very pleased that the proposal includes two superintendents, one from the Metro and one from Greater Minnesota, to serve on the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. We believe that our members, our superintendents, have a role in this process and are pleased that there are two seats assigned. We're also very pleased with the flexibility of the tiered system, particularly in Tier 1. I'd like to share that I believe that our superintendents and our school boards come from a perspective of trust, and I have no doubt that every time they make a decision on a hire, it is not a dollar and cents decision, but it's a decision based on the best available person for the position. And as defined under the proposal for Tier 1, it'll empower our school districts to bring people in, because there have been times, I know I've gotten calls in August and September from superintendents saying, we applied, we don't have the license yet, what do I do? And this would eliminate that situation, and we're very grateful for that. With that, Madam Chair, as this bill moves forward, be more than willing to work with you and your colleagues to get it to fruition and signed by the governor. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Madam Chair, we want to thank you for your commitment to improving the Minnesota's teacher licensure system. It is commendable. And then on behalf of the locally elected school board members across the state, we appreciate the opportunity here to speak to the Delete Everything for House File 140. First of all, I'd like to speak to you in regards to the issue of governance. MSBA supports the transfer of all teacher licensing activities from MDE and DOT to a newly created Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. We believe that one single entity to govern and handle teacher licensing will greatly provide greater clarity for potential teachers in the state of Minnesota. However, in regards to that board, we respectfully ask that the makeup of the board include at least two school board members. Currently, there are two sitting school board members on the board of teaching, and along with that, we would also like to respectfully ask that you include one human resources representative who is responsible for recruiting, hiring, retaining, and letting go teachers on a regular, on a daily basis as well. And we also want to point out on page 13 of the bill that we strongly support your very clear language that states, rules adopted by the new board must not be in conflict with state statute. And if they are, state statute prevails. With that said, we note that there are a number of places where there are references to rulemaking, and we do ask, do the current rules stay in place until the new board goes through the very lengthy, complicated process of rulemaking? Also, Madam Chair, we support the requiring of approved college and university-based teacher preparation programs to provide alternative pathways, as you do in the bill. However, we ask, what are the consequences of noncompliance? And hopefully this would not mean that they would lose their approval, or it could actually have the adverse effect of reducing the approved programs in the state, and, of course, then putting the number of teacher candidates in the educational system as fewer. And then, Madam Chair, we support the strong student teaching component to the licensure process. However, was your intention to recodify that we have a year-long student teaching experience? If so, this could cause very serious financial barriers for many of our teacher candidates across the state. Madam Chair, we support the information and data to inform best teaching preparation practices as outlined in the bill on page 16. However, we respectfully suggest that instead of just mandating new reporting requirements, could we consolidate or narrow those reporting requirements into something that the school districts are already doing, either for the supply and demand report or for their QComp plans once we expand QComp statewide?
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. And would you be sure that you provide us with, like I've asked other groups, with those written comments or suggestions?
I do have them, and may I make one other comment?
One last thing.
And then, Madam Chair, in regard to the tiered licensure model, we really appreciate the direction that you have taken in Tier 1 and 2, the short-term licenses. Recognizing industry-related professional experts is needed in our high schools. We are short those types of teachers. And then we firmly support the authority that you give to the school district or the board when your language reads, while giving the authority to employing school district to determine the professional credential. We think that that is completely appropriate to give that authority to the local school district. So we totally support that. And so in summary, Madam Chair, we do believe that the proposed language does streamline the licensure process, and it is a giant step in the right direction. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Walseth and Mr. Nolan, please. On deck will be Teach for America. Is Mr. Walseth not here?
He's here, but I'll shorten it up for you, Madam Chair.
So, Teach for America, would you come to the table, please? Welcome, and please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm Fred Nolan, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association, representing 223 Greater Minnesota school districts, educating 237,000 students every day. We really appreciate the work of the Chair and the Legislative Task Force on Educator Licensing to streamline the system and remove the system as a barrier to the supply of qualified teachers in all areas of the state and education license areas. MREA produced a report a year ago on the teacher crisis guide. We believe this teacher shortage is going to be with you for your entire term and probably your successors. Now that the newly proposed professional educator licensing and standards board is being brought to life in this bill, we recommend for the chair and the committee's consideration two ways to strengthen the board's focus on teacher supply. Starting at the bottom of page 12 of the DE amendment and going to the top of page 13 is section 11 on rulemaking. And that is going to be a major product of work of this board. And we recommend a new letter D that the board must consider the effects on teacher supply whenever it adopts rules and seek to maintain high quality of teachers and an adequate supply of teachers in its adopted rules. This is similar to the Federal Reserve, but we think both sides need to be adopted. On page 33 and 34, section 14 in teacher licensure assessment, we recommend a new subdivision 5 in which the board is required to regularly evaluate these licensure assessments by contracting with an outside entity such as Cary at the University of Minnesota. You've already heard instances about the effect on teachers of color, but we think these exams should distinguish whether, check whether they really distinguish between effective and non-effective teachers, and see if the exams and their private and public costs are a barrier to the supply of teachers without increasing the assurance of quality of teachers. Teacher supply is real. We expect it to be long-term. And finally, I want to remark a little bit on testimony in Tier 1. Tier 1 is there because we have a teacher shortage. As you heard, boards and superintendents are trusted to put qualified people in front of the classrooms. It's going to be flexible. It's going to be somewhat non-uniform, but it is limited to just 3 years. So with those, I conclude my remarks and support the overall work and make those recommendations.
Thank you, Dr. Nolan. Welcome, Ms. Koslig from Teach for America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Mary Koslig. I'm the Director of Alumni Strategy and Impact for Teach for America Twin Cities. Teach for America works in partnership with communities to expand educational opportunities for children facing the challenge of poverty. Founded in 1990, TFA recruits and develops a diverse core of outstanding college graduates and professionals to make an initial 2-year commitment to teach in high-need schools and become lifelong leaders in the effort to end educational inequity. We've been operating in Minnesota since 2009 as an AmeriCorps program with a current core of 41 first and second year teachers and over 650 alumni serving across sectors in our state, with more of our alums serving directly in schools than any other single profession among them. The vast majority of our new and experienced teachers serve in high need schools, many of which see upwards of 90% of their students qualify for free and reduced price lunch. We support the tiered licensure system as written in House File 140 and are pleased with the direction that this committee has taken to reform and streamline Minnesota's licensure laws to provide clear requirements and timelines with multiple points of entry. As we shared with many of you this past summer, we believe a tiered licensure system that encourages and allows for many different and rigorous pathways to the classroom, including alternative, conventional, and non-conventional, will serve to broaden access to the profession and begin to address the dramatic staffing and licensure shortages we see in our partner schools across the metro area. As presented, the tiered system would also provide consistency and transparency, especially to out-of-state applicants with alternative training, as some of these experienced educators have endured significant and unnecessary difficulty under the current system in becoming teachers in Minnesota after having been successful licensed teachers in other states. We are eager to continue to engage in this discussion over the coming months to create a licensure system that is fair, consistent, and transparent. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify and look forward to the process to come.
Thank you very much. Chamber of Commerce and Minnesota Business Partnership representatives, please come forward. Welcome, and please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Stacey Stout, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber has over 2,300 members, most of whom are medium to small-sized businesses. The number one concern we hear from our members is the skilled worker shortage. Therefore, we are concerned about having an effective teacher at the front of every classroom. And we're very supportive of this bill, and we appreciate the work of this committee. This bill, as amended, provides a tiered licensure system that is simple to understand, and it consolidates the licensing responsibility in one entity. We appreciate the work that has gone into this, and we believe that this restructured system provides a much-needed consistency and transparency. Again, we appreciate the work, and we look forward to working with the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stout. Welcome, Mr. Bartholomew. Please say your name and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of the amended version of House File 140. First, we'd like to thank Representatives Erickson, Christensen, and Mariani for your work on the Legislative Study Group on Educator Licensing, and to the committee as a whole for your efforts to improve our licensure system. Overall, the Delete Everything Amendment to House File 140 makes tremendous progress in streamlining the licensure process and making it more understandable for prospective teachers and the public. We would have preferred to have all licensure responsibilities consolidated within the Department of Education, in part to create a stronger link between K-12 and higher education. That said, the proposed licensure board not only consolidates responsibilities, but with the new membership, it also creates a needed fresh start. The tiered licensure structure in Article 2 provides clear expectations for what qualifications people need to enter a classroom, and it allows people to build on previous experiences and qualifications to advance professionally. Frankly, having the criteria for each tier identified in statute will make it easier for people to understand their current status and what they need to do, whether they're a younger person thinking of becoming a teacher, someone considering a mid-career change, or they're a licensed teacher moving in from another state. In short, as amended, House File 140 and the tiered structure will help qualified people enter the profession and contribute to the state's long-term solution for increasing teacher diversity and improving our supply of effective teachers. Thank you, and we look forward to continuing to work with you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Our last testifier will be Adosh Uni from the Department of Education. Please come forward. Welcome. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. I'd like to thank the author and the committee for the opportunity to provide some comments on this bill. So in terms of the governance consolidation portion, as you know, the department has testified several times that we're largely supportive of the OLA's recommendations, and that also pertains to consolidation of the governance model. We do want to caution advocate for some caution regarding the timing of the change in the consolidation. Just for your knowledge, between July and October of every year, the licensing division processes, I believe, two-thirds to three-fourths of all new licensure applications and relicensure applications. A lot of the changes that would occur under this bill do occur during that time period. We do understand the need for the change to happen, but we want people to be aware that changeover in staffing at the department and consolidation of staffing at the Board of Teaching could possibly create some disruption for the licensure application process. So we just want to be mindful of that, work with the author, work with members to make sure that that is as smooth of a process as possible. There are issues. It's not simply a consolidation issue. We do have four unions at the department. There are issues to work through in terms of bumping rights, seniority rights, and things like that that we need to be cognizant of. One area also I would like to bring some light to is the completion of the teacher supply and demand report. The report is still with the department up until 2020, so we would have to complete that, I believe, in 2019 as well. Right now, the director of our licensing department, Mr. Onset, is actually in charge of creating that report. So the expertise for creating that report would be moved over to the new professional board, and so we'd want to be thoughtful about where the expertise lies and the ability to create that report. In terms of tiered licensure, we appreciate the author's willingness to work with stakeholders and the department on going forward on the tiered licensure language. We're still analyzing the impact. You've heard a lot of different perspectives on the impact of the licensure proposal. We're still looking at that, and we'd welcome the opportunity to work with the author and the committee on that going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ernie. Members, no doubt we will recess and resume at 5 o'clock, but we're going to start the amendment process. And then when we resume tonight, we will have time for discussion. Representative Mariani moves the A4 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the A4 amendment.
Please explain.
Madam Chair, this has to do with the ability of school districts to essentially bypass Tier 3 or Tier 4 applicants And I understand the flexibility we're trying to build here to be able to jump quickly to a Tier 1 applicant. There may well be, Madam Chair, instances where that may be the appropriate thing to do, maybe the only thing the school district can do. However, I think this really raises the question for us about our seriousness of making sure that we have the most highest qualified, fully licensed applicants placed whenever it is possible. At the very least, I think it should be incumbent on school districts to be able to explain why they can't be able to fill a position with a Tier 3 or Tier 4 qualified applicant. One that certainly would reflect our intention of making sure that we're really driving professionalism, as the chair indicated at the beginning of her testimony today. It also would provide us with the ability to collect the data that we need to know what the dynamics are on the ground so that if there are things that we need to do to be able to drive, more quantity of highly qualified teachers that we're then being able to do that. I also do worry that in poor school districts who may be in a position not to afford a highly qualified teacher, we may not know that, have the data so that we can address those economic and perhaps other issues that they're facing. We have a new statewide board, job posting board, that makes it easier to get the word out for Tier 3 and Tier 4 candidates. In the past, that's been a real struggle, particularly for small school districts across the state. But our ability to now get the word out is easier. And so I think we've been removing barriers relative to school districts being able to access highly qualified teachers, at least in terms of the information. So, Madam Chair, I think it's really important that we have the data consistently in this body as well as the new professional board about, what the real barriers are that may be driving perhaps an overneed in the use of Tier 1 qualified teachers. And so I think, this would not bar that from happening. It would just simply set a really strong expectation and message from us and from the board, to our school districts to really work awfully hard to get those much more highly qualified teachers placed in their classrooms. So I would hope that this would be a friendly amendment, and I would encourage your adoption of it.
Thank you, Representative Mariani, for your thoughts. I still believe that we want to honor the local control of our school boards, who for several years now have made wise decisions in ensuring that they have the best in their classrooms. So members, not wanting to diminish that authority that is vested in our school boards and in our superintendents and principals, and even our teachers, who I know weigh in on hiring decisions because they often sit on those personnel committees, and they have to make determinations in this regard, too. So with that, Representative Murray, I would recommend a no vote unless you want to withdraw this, and we work on it together at some other time.
Madam Chair, I'm fine with a voice vote, and I certainly would pick you up in the office to continue to.
Thank you, Representative Marnie. Merit Mariani. So let us vote on the 140A4 amendment that Representative Mariani has offered. So I'll renew his motion that the A4 amendment be before us. So all those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Those opposed, no. No. The motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Let us move to the A7 amendment. Representative Kunesh-Vadeen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to offer this amendment
as it allows certain coursework to substitute for the Tier 3 requirement that a teacher candidate must pass all of the required exams. I'm concerned that requiring teachers to pass the MTLE without providing another path forward could lead to otherwise really qualified candidates to leave the profession. Just this week I had a letter from a co-worker that I started working with 20 years ago, and this young man has been in the Minneapolis School District, has completed his coursework, has received all sorts of accolades and awards for his innovative teaching, but struggles to pass the one math test that is in the Pearson MTLE series of tests. This is a young man that could easily fall through the cracks and is able to reach our students who struggle economically and socially. And it also shows that the MTLE has shown significantly lower pass rates among our non-white teacher candidates and candidates from low socioeconomic situations. And we feel that this is likely the reason that there is underrepresentation of teachers in color of Minnesota. So I would ask you to take this motion into consideration.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Kudin. Members, the MTLE skills test has not been in place since 2010, replaced by the National Evaluation Series and now a menu, so I would recommend a no vote. I will renew Representative Kunesh-Kudin's motion that the A7 amendment be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. No, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A9 amendment. Representative Bly offers the A9 amendment. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. And I do respect your desire to improve and maintain the quality of teachers. I'm a little bit concerned about this measure that would exclude bargaining representatives. It seems arbitrary to me. And I, in my experience working with teachers, many of the leaders in our bargaining units are often the teachers who are most in touch with difficulties and problems and the mood of teachers throughout a district. I think that that's valuable perspective, and just to sort of say we don't want anyone like that on our board seems unwise, if not unfair. But so I hope that you'd reconsider that exclusion.
Thank you, Representative Bly. You know, the members who would serve on the board are all union members. I was when I served on the board. I was not a part of negotiating the contract, which I thought was very good because I could focus on our discussions dealing with the classroom and not be preoccupied with any other thoughts. So, members, I would recommend a no vote. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as you know, I'm supportive of your bill. I just added myself as an author to the bill. And I appreciate the Chair's willingness to have this conversation as a work in progress. And so it's in the spirit that I also have joined you on this bill. I have to say, though, Madam Chair, that the language in the present language seems to go out of its way to do something that really is not necessary to do. And I'm really afraid that we're sending the wrong message to the 70,000 licensed professional teachers in our state that we perhaps don't intend to send with that language. And so I do think that Representative Bly, this seems like a reasonable thing for us to do. And Madam Chair, I would therefore ask for a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call has been requested.
Madam Chair?
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question for clarification, because I think when I read this in the bill that I didn't completely understand it. So could you, I'm hearing some things now that make me question my understanding of this. What does this mean, exclusive bargaining representative?
Members, what this would mean is that we have rank-and-file teachers serving on the board and that they are not part of the bargaining unit's selected or elected positions. They are the rank-and-file, and that's what is most important, I think, as we have proceeded with this proposal, that those who sit on the board of teaching are out of the classroom, focusing on the classroom only, and do not bring to the board other concerns that they may have that could enter into the discussions as they make decisions. So it's basically to say we want rank-and-file teachers. We want those who come out of the classroom without having been or a part of the bargaining representation. So not one who's negotiating, for example, a contract.
Madam Chair?
And so we presently have it on the board, so we've had this issue.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it isn't that they can't be members of the union.
Oh, absolutely not, no.
It's just
they'll
the
be members
union.
Of the board.
All
yes.
Right. All right.
They will be members of the union, just not be part of negotiating a contract.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative May Quaid, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you explain some of the, you mentioned there have been issues with this. Could you just explain some of the issues that have happened before, and maybe it'll be when we come back at 5 o'clock, just so I can understand more about what issues have arisen before.
And thank you for your question. And members, we will recess at this time, and we'll take up the A9 amendment when we reconvene at 5 o'clock in room 5. This meeting stands in recess. We'll come back to order after that second recess. Representative Mariani, I already did transact that discussion we had, so with all due respect, I hope it was okay that we withdrew the, on Representative Wise's behalf, I withdrew the amendment and told the committee that we will be removing that language from the delete all.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the conversation we had during the recess, and that's correct. And so thank you. I apologize for holding up the committee, and I look forward to continue working on this issue with you.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. And you do offer the A-10 amendment. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, yes. So, Madam Chair, this amendment has to do with the general rulemaking issue relative to the new board. As you all know, currently the board has the ability to do this. And I do understand the thinking, you know, in terms of why this is not being proposed in the new framework. You know, we're creating a much more clear, if you will, set of expectations and guidance in state statute. I do think, however, Madam Chair, you and I have served on this committee for a number of years, that there are always things that come up in this important profession. And so I think it was really wise at one point where, and I suspect it predates us, where general rulemaking authority was conferred in order to make sure that this board can consistently adjust itself to the constantly emerging needs of students and the professionals that come before us. So, Madam Chair, I would encourage us to be able to return that ability of the board. I don't think we need to fear, this new board stepping outside of any other work that we wanted to do, because I do think that the language before us provides much clearer direction for this professional board. But I just think this is an important tool for this body to continue to have, and I would encourage your support.
Representative Mariani does offer the A-10 amendment. Representative Mariani, I think we need to have further discussion on what actually these words mean. I'm afraid they're a little bit too broad for us to accept today. I think that's a discussion we need to have as we move forward, because I wouldn't want it to suggest that we're not going to put some of this in statute. And with that fear, members, I would have to at this time recommend a no vote. Representative Mariani, any response?
Madam Chair, I tell you what, why don't we also work on this? We've got a good, pretty good spirit going on here. I do think there's some important things for us to consider, but we're going to have several cracks at this issue.
So I'll
withdraw this
amendment. Thank you very much. The amendment 810 is withdrawn. And you have the next two as well, Representative Mariani. So the next one, Representative Mariani offers the 813. Please explain your amendment.
Madam Chair, as you know, I would move the 813 amendment. Madam Chair, as you know, the governor can reappoint the current the governor has the ability to appoint current board members. The language before us would not allow the reappointment of current board members to serve out the rest of their terms. We heard earlier from the department some management challenges that the legislation proposals. I don't think we heard from the department objections to the direction of the bill, but I think there was some real honest concern about the ability to tie in something we passed this legislation to tie in. The work is all sorts of very practical things that are at play here, staffing issues in particular. In the midst of all that, we're going to have a brand new board. You've served on the board in the past. I work with boards. I can tell you that it's really vitally important to have consistency and experience in a governance body. I don't think that it's unreasonable for us to be able to have the ability of current board members to continue per the governor's reappointment, and then to steadily phase in the configuration of this board the language in the bill. So I would really encourage just for no other reason, just to make sure that there's some really good constant experience present at the board that can provide some history just solid experience about being a board. Doing this work that we not remove the ability of the governor to reappoint current members to serve out the rest of their terms.
Representative Mariani, I agree with you to a certain extent. However, I would not want the status quo to continue to exist. I understand the argument that I heard the department make this morning about institutional memory and others as well. But would you be willing to withdraw this so we can work on this?
Madam Chair, you're in a majority, so I suspect it's probably another invitation to make sure we get this right. I do think, Madam Chair, I'll never do that, but I do think it is important that there is continuity. And we're only talking about serving out the rest of the terms here. There's no attempt here to distort the new configuration of the board here. Experience counts. You can bet that the small staff that the Board of Teaching is going to be leaning pretty heavily at its experience. Board members to be able to do the will of the legislature, even as we're taking them in a slightly different direction. So with your promise of working dutifully with me to make sure that we provide some good, strong stability, I'll withdraw this amendment at this point.
Madam Chair, may I make a suggestion. It feels a little like we're talking about some hypothetical kinds of things, because I think it would be helpful if we knew what the dates are. Who's, you know, how many people are turning over 1st of July, if that's what it is, and so how many new seats. So rather than just kind of mm-hmm. all or nothing, or, you know, abstractly saying we'll blend this somehow, but I think when we have that conversation, to have the information of numbers of people that will be changing and how soon the others will, how many, three in another year, that kind of thing. So maybe you can structure it a little bit differently so there's a gradual change, but working on it with that in mind, I think, would be helpful.
And Representative White, I think it'd be great homework for you.
Yes.
So you report back to us on what you found out about the terms and whose expires when. So with that, Representative Mariani withdraws the 813 amendment with the promise that we're going to work together.
Representative Mariani, you have the last amendment, the A-12. Representative Mariani offers the A-12 amendment.
Madam Chair, I would move the A-12 amendment. And you and I did have a conversation. We are going to move ahead with a vote on this one, but however, there are two components to the amendment. So, Madam Chair, I'll move to divide the A-12 amendment so that we can take one up and then discuss the other part as well. So I would move that we amend, we divide the amendment basically, I believe, I'm correct, maybe Councilor's help here. So the first part would be 1.1 through 3.32.
Correct.
And then the second part would be 4.1 through 6.19.
Correct.
And I'd like to move the first part of that division.
Representative Mariani moves to divide the A-12 amendment so that we will vote first on 1.1 through 3.32. Explain that part of your amendment, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this is an amendment that was brought to me by Ed Allies. We may want to ask them to come up and help us with it, but you know, quite frankly, what the amendment does is it does some working off of existing language. It does some clarifying language that directs the board to be able to focus on the criteria that already exist in state statute relative to alternative teacher licensure, and removes, therefore, the ability to do to add other criteria to those alternative teacher licensure issues. It also does a separation from the higher ed requirement for alternative teacher licensure. I know that it's been a controversial a piece here over the years. I had a bill many years ago that kept those two together. We subsequently moved some language that allowed for certain programs to be able to have that kind of separation. I think we've been kind of taking baby steps toward this direction as we've tested out the efficacy and professionalism of certain alternative teacher licensure programs. And so this just takes another step in that direction. And I'm going to stop before I, because I don't have my notes in front of me, before I say things from memory that I forget, and I'd ask our colleagues from that Allies to fill this out.
And before we call in Mr. Cross and members, this is on page 42 of our delete amendment. It would delete section 21 and insert what Representative Mariani is offering in the division of the A-12. Welcome, Mr. Carson. Please explain. Say your name for the record first and explain the concept of this and what the language says.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Joshua Carson with Ed Allies. This legislation or this amendment was out of the work of Ed Allies as well as Troy Haugen from Greater Monroe, Minnesota, as well as the Board of Teaching. And not very often do you see Ed Allies working very closely with the Board of Teaching coming up with a great piece of legislation like this. But basically what this does is it clarifies our alternative teacher certification laws so that our alternative teacher certification programs can actually function and work as alternative teacher certification programs. It would mirror the standards and the expectations of teacher preparation and allow alternative teacher preparation programs to actually be alternative in nature. It also provides some clarification around certain provisions in the law. Currently, in the state of Minnesota, we don't have a single alternative teacher certification program simply because the laws just don't allow for one. So this really gets to the intent, the spirit of the laws that were passed a few years ago. It also, in addition to all of that, brings back the efforts of the chair of Madam Chair's bill so that it aligns our alt cert language to the Professional Education Licensing and Standards Board. So it is a needed fix in order to also change our tiered licensure programs. We'll also need to make these changes as well.
Thank you, Mr. Carson.
Representative
Mariani.
So again, in current language we have approval of alternative teacher programs based on board-adopted criteria, but we also have criteria in state statute. We have six criteria that range from $200 instructional phase. We're adding observed classroom experience, research-based, research, results-oriented approach, strategies to combine pedagogy with best teaching practices. There's a lot of thought that have been, crafted into state statute relative to holding these programs to high standard, to high standards. And so the idea here is to really kind of loosen up, if you will, the leash, the harness, I'm not sure what the metaphor is, that we've had on these programs, again, because we've got some, you know, some mileage underneath us. We have criteria in state statute that should assure us of quality standards. And again, I would be remiss if I didn't repeat that, you know, we're also removing the mandate that there be a partnership with a college or university as well. So members might want to talk about that. So I just want to be real clear about what we're doing here. But it really is about unleashing the power of these alternative programs that we've increasingly been experiencing some very good results here and also nationally. I would say, Madam Chair, one final thing is that I do think, while this does a heavy focus on modernizing, if you will, alternative teacher licensure programs, that we should not stop. And it's not in this amendment, but I just want to say this. We shouldn't stop our efforts to consistently align the vision and direction of this legislature with what we expect out of our traditional teacher prep programs. And I hope that as we continue to evolve this policy area that we spend time and energy and also creating more modern ways in which we can have higher expectations of our traditional teacher prep programs and also providing some freedom of movement for them as well.
And thank you, Representative Mariani. And members, this also would delete Section 22 on page 42, and that continues into page 43 and ends on page 44, deleting Section 26. And then in Section 27 on that same page, the added language would occur. Mr. Crossan, would you come back to the table and clarify to what extent this amendment and this deletion and new insertion would assist our teachers of color as far as getting into alternative pathways, maybe through Grow Your Own, paraprofessionals moving forward. Would you comment on that? Because I think that's sort of at the heart of this.
Right, absolutely.
Mr. Crossan.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. At the heart of this legislation is to allow schools to be able to hire and for teachers who are mission aligned to those schools to be able to teach in certain programs. It also increases teacher diversity, or it has increased teacher diversity in other states. Again, in the state of Minnesota, we don't have an alternative certification program that exists, but in states that do, alternative certification programs have increased teacher diversity 10, 20, 30-fold. Teach for America, for example, has 50% teachers of color as part of their programs. Relay, which is a residency program, has about 60% black and Latino teachers. The New Teacher Project has about 60% teachers of color within their cohort. So as that relates to our Minnesota numbers at 4% teachers of color, this would just be a remarkable shift in how we educate our teachers for mm-hmm. classroom.
Are there questions from members? Okay, seeing none, we will vote on the division from 1.1 through 3.32. All those in... No, we're not going to go there. We're just going to hear the explanation of the amendment. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the... amendment as divided has been adopted. Representative Mariani, would you like to withdraw then the rest of this amendment and maybe consider it in finance?
Madam Chair, I would. However, I do want to say a couple things very quickly.
Please do, yes.
So we had this conversation in recess, and this obviously is an appropriation piece. We're going to have an opportunity in finance to be able to come back with this. There's also a couple other bills that we can look at. If this bill continues to move forward by itself, and so there might be a more appropriate place to put this. All right, I do want to say this, and it goes to your last question of Mr. Crossan. But I do acknowledge the growing diversity of the programs that Mr. Crossan mentioned, some of which I know well, and so I have no doubt, no question of their sincerity of being contributors to diversifying our teaching corps. The bottom line, members, is unless we put money in those efforts, that's just simply not going to happen. Or let me better say it, it's only going to happen in dribs and drabs. You know, we're at a really small percentage in our state. I just got back from the state of Oregon. They're at 10% teacher of color. They pretty much look like us demographically. And yet they're a smaller state, so they have a higher percentage and they have a higher number of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in their classrooms. And part of, this is the only thing, part of what makes that happen is that they're actually investing in that. And so the second part, I know very few of us here serve on finance, but the second part has to do with targeting communities of color specifically for making investments in things, all the things that we talked about, the scholarships, loan forgiveness, you know, supports, et cetera, just like the state of Oregon is doing, a state with much smaller population, but easily twice the percentage and many more teachers of color than we have. So it's unfinished business. It's good that we've got this policy language up front and move forward in this bill. We're going to have to make this kind of investment if we're really going to move the needle in the state of Minnesota. So I'll be bringing this back in Finance Committee. I would look for your support, Madam Chair, as we make that case with Chair Loon and with the committee there. And at this point, then, I will withdraw the second part of this amendment.
Representative Mariani withdraws the second division of the A-12 amendment. Discussion, members, before we move to adopt the delete all as amended to House File 140. Discussion. Please continue to share your thoughts with both Representative Mariani and me and with Andrew Hasek, my committee administrator, and with DFL research, because this is a work in progress. We don't know what the Senate file looks like yet, and, of course, that's with whom we will probably have a conference committee. And this now will go to government operations because of the change in the board makeup. So, hearing nothing, members, I'm going to move that House file, that the delete all amendment, the DE1, be attached to 140 officially, and would ask for a vote on that. So the DE1 as amended now will become a part of House File 140. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and House File 140 is intact. Is there further or discussion? No.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Just very quickly, just for my sake and the sake of the members, we have a little bit of discussion about this as well, and I think we're kind of also trying to figure this out. But what can you tell the members at this point? Obviously, it's going to government ops. There may be another committee that may want to look at it. Is it the intent of the author to be able to move this bill independent of an omnibus bill? Are we going to see it again in this committee, perhaps? Is it going to move on to finance, et cetera?
Members, and thank you, Representative Mariani. This bill now will, we'll refer it to the Committee on Government Operations. Public Safety has asked to see it because of the mandatory reporting,
and then it will be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. It will then move separately, is my plan, but probably also included in the omnibus bill, so we'll get another chance in the policy omnibus bill perhaps to discuss it as well. So it might follow two paths. So, members, I had that vote, and I didn't say that we had to re-refer to government operations. So just to clarify, House File 140 is re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. So that's cleared up. Any other comments? Stay in touch. Thank you very much. This meeting